Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Justin Robert Young.
Hey, let's get after the things.
All right, so let's jump right in here. After Things, by the way, for those of you listening the first time, it's a podcast kind of for creatives where we give our input and advice on different businesses or ideas or things people want to do. And again, we want to just put the warning out there. You know, we're still trying to figure this out, so I wouldn't, put too much weight to anything we say ever at all. Period.
I do want to update everybody. There was something that we were talking about last week on After Things, and that was our little contender rush printed versions of mini expansions for the first debate. We wound up doing that. We sold them really well on Monday. They sold really well on Tuesday. We ran a little sale during the debate. And what we wound up doing after the order went in was effectively creating about 260 something expansions, I think is where it landed. There's a little overage just in case things get screwed up, but we effectively sold them out. So it was a good thing. We wound up doing kind of everything we wanted in terms of bringing people to the store and reactivating people who have already bought the game, and it was well done. I was really excited, and thankfully they had a debate on Monday that didn't make me write a bunch, because I could just kind of copy down words that were said, which is very exciting to me.
Which brings us to our first question on After Things, and this one says mostly for me, but I think everybody's involved in this. This one's mostly for Andrew. This is from NT Morgan, by the way, but I'm very interested in Justin Bryan's opinion. Well, I'm glad somebody is. How, in a current state of world political tumult, does one write speculative future fiction? Do you avoid the political part altogether? Do you make your best guess? Do you, to be frank, just make it up? I'm stuck as hell, and if you could find the time, I could use any and all forms of advice, pretty please.
I mean, I think it's a very tempting thing to believe that somehow the political scene is unprecedented, and that this time it really, for reals, we really mean it. It's the election of the century. Everyone has thought that always, forever, and it's never been true, except for maybe during World War II.
That's one of those weird statements where it's like, oh, this is the most important election ever. And I would go the other way. I think it's always true, but it's not ever remarkable. Like, the world continues to be the most exciting that it's ever been and has the most consequence that it's ever had, which is good for our civilization, that we continue to evolve and do crazy fun stuff. But what I don't think is true is that this is something that in any way, in terms of writing about the future of where our civilization and our culture might be, it's still nowhere near like where we were with like Cold War or something like that, or an actual world war. I think that, the future, I don't think that in a speculative fiction that the future 50 years from now would look much different if either person got elected.
Yeah, that's sort of what it kind of comes down to, is that our republic is going to survive either way. And it has historically. It's been endured for, over 200 years. And it's going to, short term, things may not go the way that one person, one political persuasion, another wants, but we have a system, a brilliant system of checks and balances that's frustrating when those checks and balances get in the way of the things that you want pushed through. But, it'll thrive. And we, I heard this. Like, what if so-and-so does this? Like, we can have any number of scare scenarios, and I understand that. But, that's exactly what they are. It's everybody trying to put together their own sort of fear of, oh, well, this person or that person or whatever. And it's more emotionally driven than rational driven. And also the person that you're most afraid of, well, guess what? so will the other people be, and you might have even more checks and balances. It might even be better in some cases.
I would say probably just right around it. Just assume things are pretty much, you know, where they are now. If you're writing about the future, write about, you know, everybody griping about President so-and-so, who cares? One of the examples, and I could tell the author thought he was being so clever at the time, and I hated it. Took me right out of the book. The movie was terrible, but the book was palatable. But Stephen King's Dreamcatcher came out in the year 2000, 2001, pre 9/11. But there was this part where you could tell he wrote the book before the legal debate about who was going to be the president had been settled. So he very carefully had a character like, oh, the president's declaring an emergency. Old President Okie Finoki, he called him, on account of that brouhaha in Florida. And it's like, and then he goes on to describe, you know, there he is, President Okie Finoki, with his southern drawl. Is it Gore? Is it Bush? Who knows? It works either way. And his, you know, pandering, but whatever. And he goes on to like just write a whole bunch of stuff that, and you could tell he was so, or I don't know how proud he was, but it felt like he was really happy that he was doing this dance. It's kind of like when the New York Times crossword puzzle, wrote. There's one where it's like you could the today's elected president, and it worked for Bush or Gore. All the other cross things on there. And so anyway. In trying to be coy and clever, it just took me right out of the book, and it was not very fun to read.
That was, man, remember the so dome. The dome is he had his meth dealing villain, and to show us how bad he was, the guy had a picture of Dick Cheney on the wall. It's like, I'm like, oh my god, that's like, it's so. Listen, I would hope one day to be able to write a fraction as well as Stephen King does, but I read that. I'm like, that's like middle school. That's just like, you know, here's how evil he is. You know?
It's very weird for Stephen King, who is so restrictive and conservative about how he doles out his political opinions via fiction.
Yeah. The answer is, yeah, like it doesn't. If you're trying to write political fiction or whatever, you're writing fiction. You get to make whatever choices you want. And if you go back and you read classic Heinlein or Asimov or Arthur C. Clarke, you know, the vision of what they thought life would be like even in the 1990s was almost probably even laughable if you looked at it from that point of view. And part of their goal, really, their job was not to predict the future. Their job was to tell you an interesting story, a what if kind of thing, not to write, Rand Corporation reports on what it will really be like. It's to tell stories and to give you much more imaginative and interesting places than we live right now. Sometimes, you know, people forget that. And I know I've tried when I write sci-fi, like when I wrote, you know, Station Breaker, and I wanted to set something very near term, very near Earth. I just tried to figure out from a technological point where things were going to be. And I assumed on the broader scope, what is the geopolitical scene going to be like as we start having low Earth orbit technology, rapid reusable rockets, and we're going back and forth? And like, this is my guess. I'm not right. I know I'm not accurate, but I think that I'm probably more accurate than a lot of other people trying to guess in that area because I'm least trying to take what's really going on. But I think, you know, don't buy into the hysteria that it's the end of the world. You know, things move on.
And just realize, like, whatever it is you have to say, full stop, about anything political today is going to look ridiculous and dated in just 2 years. Like, you're better off not even talking about it, I think, in general.
I mean, giving an example of an extremely fun book, highly entertaining movie was The Martian by Andy Weir. And Weir based his vision on Mars. Even before the book got published, what we knew radically changed. And granted, things we already knew, like there was not enough wind pressure to cause a storm like that. But like water is that was a primary problem. And his story was trying to find water on Mars. And so, you know, the idea of having to use rocket fuel to do that, which if you watch the movie Martian, you're left with the impression like water is really hard to find. Like, no, just go outside the hab and scoop it up and you have it. But that's a changing thing. Things changed radically from the time that when he first conceived of the book or started doing some of his research on that, it changed, you know, even before it got released, we knew. I mean, there were the speculation was there. Actually, if you dug deeper in the science, you probably could have known that. But it didn't matter. It's in a great. It's an entertaining story. It's a really, really entertaining story. That he presents a vision of space exploration where Blue Origin and SpaceX aren't even present. That we, you know, we've got to go to the Chinese military to save us. Doesn't matter. It's a fun story. And so that's what your goal is to write. If your characters are real and your people are real, then we just accept that it's like a different version of our future where things play differently.
And let's say you do want to say like, oh, Trump's been elected and everything's gone to crap. And like, that's fine. I don't care. It's like, just set up the rules for your story and I will accept them because I can read Ray Bradbury's stories about, you know, walking in the endless rains on Venus. And I don't bristle at the fact that this is out of date and we know that Venus is a, you know, face-melting hellhole. Instead, I'm like, oh, this, in this world, the rules are it's a jungle planet where it always rains. Cool. Let's keep going. In your world, it could be, a hellscape where Trump is president or Clinton is president. Who cares? Just set the rules and just go for it.
I just went through another copy edit on my book, Blackfall, my new Jessica Blackwood novel, which comes out in March. And you have to go through some of these little things there where like, a copywriter says, well, I don't think this organization exists. I don't think this exists. I'm like, yeah, you know what? Main character made her up too, you know?
Right.
What matters is, do you believe it? You know, does it feel real in the moment? And fine. So don't worry. I feel like we all sort of suspect that you're thinking that, you know, option A or option B is going to lead to an apocalypse or it's going to lead to some sort of, you know, government, you know, each party affiliation has their own doomsday scenario.
And also the way that this political landscape looks right now is going to be very different than how it'll look by Thanksgiving.
Agreed.
Like, yeah. If you are looking at what is special now, the only thing that is special now in this election compared to other ones is that politically we have never had two people that are this unpopular run against each other, which means that there's a lot of mud being thrown and a lot of ill feelings right now. I suspect that that will change once, you know, voting day is done.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, go back and look at the history of, let's say, Andrew Jackson's election and others, you know, and there's so much precedent for all of this. It's not, you know. Next question comes in from Rogue Creator. Hey, guys, I'm a beginning magician. By beginning, I mean performing magic for about 5 years that has used magic as more of a hobby and not really put on time to make it a full-time gig because I haven't felt the need to do so yet. In my years of performing, I've created my own tricks that I'm extremely proud of, and I believe that some of these tricks would be a good fit to put into the world of magic. My question is about how to go releasing magic tricks into the magic community, Penguin Magic, etc. Thanks, Rogue Creator.
Number one, dismantle the visual heuristic of believing that there is something as a singular magic community and that you are showing up to the council of other magicians and presenting your art, whatever it is. That does not exist, and you will experience pain if you treat it as such. Instead, realize that there's a marketplace of ideas that you have different players. Everybody, picture just a marketplace and everybody's shouting. They all have tables. They're all shouting at what they have available. And you can pick a table like Penguin Magic and say, hey, I got something that I think you might be able to sell. Maybe this is the better place to go. Go to The Wire on Theory 11 and open up your own table. And sell it yourself. They've got a whole marketplace that you know, they got a little bit of curation on there. But outside of that, you know, it's just, you know, you're the one shouting for people to come get your wares.
Yeah, I think that there is a community in the sense that there's an ecosystem that you can put something out there and word gets around for it. And there are different advantages to each one. I have a new trick out the device. It's this illusion where you put your arm into a box that came out of an envelope in your pocket and you shove a bunch of pencils through it in an excruciatingly painful way. And it starts off with, I have my own email system I can sell stuff to, but you know, I've had other magic distributors say, hey, do you want us to carry it? And that's the kind of thing, it's a physical product. So the advantage would be there. You can reach out to Penguin, you can reach out to Murphy's Magic, and you can consider putting it up on Theory 11 in, you know, doing those approaches. So I would say one of those is the way to go about it. And you talk to all of them, you know, illusionists. Just you go there, like they literally have places to submit your trick to them. Say, this is my trick. Remember, the more well-developed your trick, the better attention it will get. If your trick is sort of underdeveloped, don't have video, don't have a presentation, it's harder for them to understand it. And they're not going to estimate it on the real value, they're going to estimate it on the appearance of value by what you're able to communicate. So,
yeah, I would say no matter what, all of these steps rely on you doing a very effective demo video, AKA no webcam crotch shot. Like, just try to shoot something that is clean and clear and shows exactly what the intended effect of the trick is. Because whether you're showing it to people on the wire, you're showing it to people who might buy them more in bulk or want to put some marketing muscle behind it, or you're doing it by yourself and just putting it up at a message board or on your YouTube channel with a link of where people can buy it, you want a good video that demonstrates what it is. Like, that's, I can't stress that enough.
And when it comes to economic considerations, the advantage of partnering with a company is twofold. One is you get validation of the idea. If they tell you they think this is a good idea and there's a market for it, then it means it's worth putting more effort to it. Two is if you get a commitment that they're going to buy something or buy in a degree, you're not spending a lot of your own money on it. Now, you lose a percentage of that, but I've known people that have like literally ruined their lives trying to market magic products with very ill thought out business plans that I advised them against it and told them, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. And then they had dollar signs in their eyes, you know, overspent, overcommitted, and paid a very, very painful price for it. So, you know, sometimes you do a deal with some of these companies just as an opportunity to find out what it's like and what to do. And then you decide you're going to do it on your own. Or, you know, and there's people worked out. I know a lot of people that's worked out really well. So, you know, their goal is not to screw you over, generally speaking. Their goal is to have a product that sells money and hopefully have a creator who can come back with more good stuff.
Agreed.
Sound good?
It's good.
Next up from Ed. Good evening, gang. I'm a longtime atheist and skeptic. All right. I have a personal axe to grind against psychics. After my father died when I was a kid, I watched my mother become obsessed with psychics, the afterlife, and in particular, John Edwards. Because of this, it took her, I think, John Edwards.
It's John Edwards. It's John Edwards.
Yeah. Singular is the psychic.
Yeah. With the S is the presidential candidate.
Okay. There we go. Thank you for the clarification. Because of this, it took her a very long time to let go and accept my father, and an afterlife or not was gone and beyond her reach. I feel psychics in general and John Edwards specifically were responsible for extending their pain. I feel they are predatory and know precisely what they're doing causes real harm. I own my own marketing firm. A while ago, a current client referred their mother to me, a prominent psychic. I'm a very firm believer in exceptional customer service, and she has a referral from a current client. So I helped her the best I could until she decided to go in a different direction for her marketing, much to my relief. I felt dirty working with her. She was always polite, professional, and courteous to me, but I hated knowing the fact that my work would be used to potentially dupe others into falling for her cold reading scam. I've made a promise to myself to never work with a psychic again. This is the first time this has happened to me. I've had plenty of great professional relationships with those who do not share my political, religious, skeptic beliefs. One of my best clients is a priest with a side secular business. I help him with his business, but this one felt wrong. Where do you personally draw the line between who you work with and what you won't? Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
Man, that's a tough question. And in that, because there's a few different vectors. There's number one, whether or not you can afford to say no to the work. And there have been times in my life that quite literally someone could have been like, I'm the devil. I want to market my ability to torture human beings. And I'd be like, well, how much an hour is it? But then all, you know, I also whether or not it will damage your brand. There's opportunities to work with businesses that I think like, man, that might be good money, but if I do it, it will damage my relationship with ChatRealm, and I cannot afford to, you know, ChatRealm and this community and our Patreon support is what makes it possible for me to do what I'm doing. Man, that's tough. I don't know. Do you have a rule of thumb for that stuff, Andrew?
I'm, you know, with you, it's there's my idealism in an idealist perfect world. There's the scenario, and I have my sort of I use an expression. I'd rather live in my car than do X, you know, and I've have not been tested on that yet, but I know that there are things that I've had friends in the television business that share my belief set and whatever, but have, you know, produced shows and done things that, you know, were, you know, the skeptic community was aghast about. And I know they personally didn't feel with it, but it was like they had to pay the lights, and their attitude was there's a difference between doing a stupid TV show and marketing the services of somebody who is actively bringing people into their business and saying, I will help you and do these things. And that's one of the things is that entertainment allows you to do a, you know, kind of an interesting line to say there's a difference between entertainment and not. And I've seen some people use that incorrectly. I've seen like some psychic entertainers go like, well, defend people like John Edward and say, well, it's just entertainment. And I'm like, no, he literally knows that people stand up asking about their dead child, want to know about their dead child. This is not a play. They literally, he is in, and they, and I've heard these sort of like, oh, well, he has, you don't know that they are like a realistic person being reasonable will understand that that's going on. You can try to play lawyer and say that we don't know for sure, but you're not being reasonable and honest. You know, you're being dishonest. And I've, you know, I always hate those sort of specious arguments where people are like, well, you don't know for sure that they know or they don't know this. It's like, well, I would say that if I asked five people, the majority would say, yeah, they know. And you're just looking for an excuse to be evil. It's hard. It can be very, very hard. And I say that, you know, I think that your goal is to position yourself in a situation where you don't have to do that. I'm not a person responsible for having to feed any other mouths besides my own. So, you know, I can have these sort of like, I'd rather live in my car than deal this or do this sort of thing. But if I have a wife and kids, guess what? That's going to be different. I think that there's certainly you have to draw the line at, you know, outright criminal. I think you have to have a pretty good idea of what you're doing ethically. And you can have, I'm in the middle of authorpage.com, and there's going to be people who are going to put books up there that are going to sell, you know, nonfiction books with pseudoscientific and silly sorts of things. My business model can't be, I'm going to police what's up there. I will be providing services and help to people who have things that I think are damaging points of view.
I think that's a really good point. Like specifically, it seems to me like a clarifying exercise would be to define what is your job and who is your boss. When I was working at Dell, there was somebody who ran some minor government institution, and they were up at the end of the quarter. They had to spend some money or they wouldn't get it next quarter. And the guy was just literally like, all right, is there a more expensive version of that? I'm like, yeah, but it's not relevant. You wouldn't need it. You would never use it. He's like, we got to spend this money. And I just felt ill, you know, being party to this mismanagement of government funds. But at that time, if it was me and I'm the one running the shop, then I could say like, look, if you want to spend money, spend it elsewhere. But I was working for Dell at the time, and I had an obligation to the company Dell. They hired me to be an effective salesperson or whatever. And so, you know, no matter how much I was sick by that guy, I was working for this other company. Likewise,
yeah, and that
real quick, in his specific example, you know, he is doing a favor to a client with a referral to this other person. So I think you did nothing wrong in that regard. And, you know, if the experience was unpleasant enough, you could say like, you know, from now on, you say like, oh, unfortunately, you know, I'd love to help. Unfortunately, I have a policy. I don't work with psychics. And now that's that phrase, I have a policy, makes it nobody's fault. It's not your fault. It's just like, oh man, I totally do it. I have this policy.
That does possibly, invite a conversation that he may or may not be excited to get into, especially if it might hurt his relationship with his other client. I do think that at the end of the day, you might be able to say, well, hey, listen, like my capacity to do this is maxed out. I can't work on it. I think if to me, you are not societally in the wrong for politely just pushing it off if you don't feel comfortable doing it. And, you know, everybody has a different relationship with their work. I know that the three of us all take our work very personally. On some level, like it informs a part of our personality. And so therefore, you know, I think we probably are prone to some more, like lines in the sand that we wouldn't cross just because, you know, this sort of stuff just means a lot. There's other people that are able to divorce themselves and their personality and their life almost totally from what they do. And,
on the subject of that, I've had conversations with Peter Wax about AuthorPage about, We're trying to make our primary business model a free website that we make money via affiliate fees when somebody buys a book from you as an author, and not try to make our primary business model offering tiers of service And the reason for that is we want to be incentivized towards helping authors sell books, not be incentivized towards selling authors services. And the difference is that you're really instead of spending our money on better marketing tools to market to authors and to try to give them to get us money, we want to spend our marketing efforts on convincing people to buy books from them. And you sometimes have to establish very early on what your goal is and what your goal is and understand where your incentives will take you. And sometimes, you know, you can see companies can say, you know, Google can say, hey, we have a, you know, don't do evil policy. Like, okay, how do you define that? And, you know, for me, you know, when they bought DoubleClick out of necessity, I understand why they economically they had to buy DoubleClick. But once you bought this company that was one of the most aggressive online marketers and some of the, you know, some of the more shady practices, it's like, well, yeah, it's nice that you had this policy, but it's not really probably what a really do no evil company would do. In
yeah.
My opinion.
So I guess, in terms of concrete terms on, you know, in this exact circumstance, I would say, decide now that you value the luxury of being able to say no to a client and realize that that is a reason to work hard and get ahead is so that you can earn for yourself the ability to not need the work and then decide what your policy is in those regards.
Yeah. I mean, it's be asking yourself questions. Ask yourself this question. That's the best way you can do it. And, you know, I've had friends who've had to do, you know, we've all had to take gigs we don't want to take. We've all had to do things we don't want to do. And certainly you have to draw the line at some point. And, you know, it can, in success in an area that you're uncomfortable with can certainly make it easy for you to keep doing the transgression. So I'm the guy that set out into the entertainment business because I wanted to create a science critical thinking educational show and ended up doing a damn prank show, stealing things from people and being a magic psychopath. So
is that really the evolution of how that,
absolutely. Yeah. I was pitching my kind of magic Bill Nye, the science guy with critical thinking. And then it's like, oh, that's great. You know, would you think about a prank show with magic? And, you know, like, I guess that gets me closer to the thing I want to do because doing a show is getting you closer to doing another show versus not doing a show. And then, you know, that was the first thing I ever did was a pilot for an MTV show that was about that.
That's
know?
Fascinating. And, you know, I guess now thinking about
that. I drove the van.
Day. Yeah, he drove the van. It was like magic drive-by.
Oh, that's amazing. I suppose that's a really good example because there are certainly times in the production of Hacking the System where it's like, you know, whenever you have a project that's bigger than you and you seed the ability to know every aspect and every thread and every bit of information coming in, like there was one moment where in the mixture of a whole bunch of survival stuff, I looked and I was like, I'm pretty sure this is note for note. Like, I'm pretty sure I know the person who made the YouTube video that this is about and luckily or where this came from. And luckily, I was able to just call that person right there on set and say, hey, this is not ideal and you're not going to be thrilled. But, you know, I've been handed this exact hack and it's pretty clear to me that this is note for note your video. If I do this, are we going to not be friends or can I make this up to you? Or can we figure out a way to balance the scales in some other way? And, you know, unluckily it turned out to not be a thing, but that's one of those things where like there were other things that I was like flat out, like, yeah, no, I won't be caught dead doing that because that's too much trouble. And I'm the one who's going to have to field the tweets down the road.
Yeah. I've been asked a lot in magic and TV. I've had people like, oh, hey, we want to go do this thing we saw somebody else do. And I'm like, that's somebody else's. I will ask them.
Yeah.
And then they get like, yeah, but do we have to? Yeah. And it's like, no, you don't have to. And I know that for some production companies, you're happy that you get to live in anonymity, that nobody knows you're the ones doing it. But I'm living this community. I'm part of this community. And if I go help you go do this, one, I'm upsetting myself. And two, you are taking something away from somebody else. And that's slippery slope, man. In TV, it's steep. It is really, really steep. And I've done, you know, I've helped before, like, well, I'll reach out to the person who did this and we'll ask them. And if they're okay with it, I will help you do with it. If they're not okay with it, I can't.
Well, and even if you try to keep everything above board, there's still stuff that slips through the cracks. I did an AMA with the launch of the Modern Rogue channel on Reddit. And one of the questions that popped up was a guy says, hi, I have a blog called Hacking the System. And It's then you made a show that had the name of my blog and then a bunch of the content that was in my blog, and you never called or asked what's up. And it's like I had to have this awkward conversation. I was like, well, you know, so I luckily I responded like, well, first of all, we marketed or we pitched the show as The Secret Knowledge of Brian Brushwood. Then the production company, you know, renamed it to How to Win at Life or How to Cheat at Life. And then, you know, it was Nat Geo that wanted the name Hacking the System as being more approachable. Sounds like you have a lovely blog. I've never read it. And I said, I can't imagine what it would be like to be that guy and feel betrayed like that. But, you know, is there anything I could, you know, do to help balance the karmic scales? And the guy was really cool. In fact, actually, he has this gizmo. If you go to pavlok.com, PAVLOK.com, I really want to learn more about this and get my hands on this. But Pavlok is basically a wristband that sets up a negative reinforcement on a little minor shock when you engage in a nervous activity to help cure you of it. So like basically, as I understand it, let's say you bite your fingernails, right? You train it by engaging in the activity of biting, chewing on your fingernails a whole bunch, and then it learns it. And then the next time it detects you doing that, just gives you a little jolt and basically creates this negative stimulation. Anyway, but this is a case where, you know, somebody felt wronged, and even though we try to do everything right, you still end up finding yourself in a situation where people perceive themselves as wronged.
Yeah, that's like an intelligent version of the rubber band system. That's TV. That's, you see that film, you see that a lot, because this is an industry full of ideas, filled with lots and lots and lots of ideas, and you get people who feel, you know, feel like, I had this and I told so and so, and then it got pitched there, and it's like, sometimes things absolutely do get ripped off and stolen, but I'd say 99.9% of the time it does not. But you know, that it just doesn't stop people from, you know, they've invested so much time and energy, they can't conceive of the idea that somebody else had that or spent that much time on it. So, gentlemen, do we have any picks, recommendations?
I got a self-promotion pick real quick. We launched t-shirts. It's been a decade, and we've known that t-shirts are a high-margin, well-beloved item, but I've not had a property, intellectual property of my own. I mean, I don't know. I guess we've sold t-shirts like Night Attack shirts and stuff. But but now we have Modern Rogue t-shirts, and we got three of them loosely themed on the three aspects of the Modern Rogue: the gentleman,
right,
the warrior.
You need to have more than three to have a business. I'm sorry.
The gentleman, the warrior, and the scoundrel. And we're really, really proud of them. We did a lot of internal testing, had people vote for their favorite designs, came up with three really, really cool t-shirts, and all of that helps get our nascent new intellectual property, the Modern Rogue, off the ground. So if you head
on
over to...
That's wonderful. Those are beautiful.
So if you head on over to scamstuff.com and just type in shirts, you'll be able to find them. But they're called Silverton, Vanguard, and Amendment 21.
You heard it. There's three designs, only one of each, only three shirts in the universe. So find one up now.
First come, first served.
Dude, that's awesome. I'll be pre-ordering mine.
My pick is same pick for weird things, and that is go watch the Elon Musk presentation video, SpaceX.com/Mars, as he unveils his Martian architecture for getting us there. It's very, very fascinating. Take a look at the slides attached to that. It's kind of a big deal. May not happen exactly that way, but dude, we've got a guy worth $12 billion who actually owns a rocket company and a solar powered company and electric transportation company that says, I'm going to put every bit of my wealth into building a rocket that will go to Mars. And like I said, I already have a rocket factory.
It's pretty great. It's a pretty good position to do that.
I don't know. He's pretty, he's got it going on. He's got a real head start. You know, he's a real plucky kid. I hope he lives up to his full potential.
Yeah.
My pick. Yeah. You know, really, Shopify. Shopify was really helpful this week. And like many entrepreneurs who have web stores, you know, you find yourself becoming obsessed with the Shopify app and alerts as, you know, things get sold or, you know, but I had to do a big mail merge and everything because I wanted to get all of our envelopes with the proper addresses and stamped. So while I'm out of town, John Teasdale, my partner, is going to have to assemble all of these little mini expansions by himself. So I wanted to make it as easy as possible for him to get them out as soon as he does. And, you know, that was the thing. And, you know, so I went step by step through between Dymo and their mail merge system and using the CSVs that are exported from Shopify and got it done. So Dymo and Shopify, that's what I used a lot today.
Shopify, I'll tell you, is a system. My downside with it is it runs so seamlessly for my digital downloads, I sort of forget it even exists.
Yeah.
You know, and that's because we used to have a system before that was frequently problematic. People didn't get their downloads, and it's been great. I think they're a very solid eco-commerce system.
Time out. Late breaking news. I have to rescind my pick because this just in, my pick, before even seeing it, my pick is Red Letter Media's Star Wars Awakens review that dropped today. It's an hour and 45 minutes long. Oh my God, I'm so excited. This is, if you haven't seen the Phantom Menace review, you are in for a treat. The Force Awakens review with Mr. Plinkett. This is amazing.
I mean, you can have two picks.
You're loud. No, you have to, everybody scrub it from your memory. I asked the jury to disregard that statement.
It's disregarded.
Disregard my client, Brian Brushwood, standing on top of the desk, removing his pants and mooning you all. Stricken from the record. It's funny, like, so the Elon Musk, you know, when he did his endorsement of Westworld, first he retweeted the trailer for Westworld, and then an hour later he writes, you know, the thing about future episodes featuring his ex-wife Tallulah does a great job playing a deadly sex bot with a smile, and then he has to write a little while later, no irony or shadement there, T's character is excellent and well played, worth seeing, and then later, wow. This tweet is like a Rorschach test.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And I guess it's because those of us aren't privy to the relationship between you and her. You then obviously were like, well, you know, but like, that's funny. That's
awesome. Even for a man who wants to make us a multi-planet species, he has fallen victim to the oldest lesson of the internet, which is that the internet is where context an inflection goes to die.
Yeah.
Everything on the internet is a Rorschach test. It is all decided by the reader and never fully controlled by the author.
Yeah. I'm not even saying it goes there to die. It doesn't even die on arrival. It just dies on the journey.
Oh, yeah. No, there is no... It is where context and inflection cannot exist.
Yeah. Gentlemen, it's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.